Welcome to the Views Podcast with your hosts, Nate Farmer Eden and Cole Farrell. Get ready to move even closer to financial freedom as they reveal the real estate investing strategies you need to acquire assets you can cash flow or flip. Now, let's get into today's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another exciting episode of Views. I am one of your co-hosts, Nate Farmer Eden. Allow me to bring in my counterpart here, Cole.
Mr. Nate, what's happening?
Cole, my brother, how are we today?
We're doing good. A little stressed out, a little bit of a headache, you know, thousands of documents, million emails, but we're doing good. We're headed to closing.
Oh, man. So close. We're like right there at the finish line. Like I can see it. I just got to cross it. Like, I need to experience this, man. This is going to be good.
I'm right on the brink between, like, jumping out the window or, like, celebrating. I just every 5 minutes is, like, one or the other. But you know how it goes. So, look, before we jump into our interview, what I'm excited for, couple housekeeping items. First, please leave us a rating and review so we can keep growing and help educate others. Second, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And third, buckle up because, as always, it's going to be a hell of a ride.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. All right, so without further ado, allow us to introduce our today's special guest star, Nick. What's going on, brother?
Nate, Cole, how are you guys? Thanks so much for having me on.
Of course.
Doing well. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. I'm right in the middle of a raise. We went under contract last week on something. We posted the webinar out this Monday with the CEO and the underwriter and myself. So we are full steam ahead on that raise, and we're off to the races.
Huge congrats on that, man. Huge. So I guess before we fully dive into all the questions, man, can you tell us a little bit about kind of what got you here, what brought you here, why real estate in and of itself? Philson.
Yeah, sure. Well, again, you know, I'm Nick Abraham. I work over at QC Capital. I'm the Senior Director of Investor Relations. It's just a fancy way of saying, you know, I'm here as a resource to accredited investing partners to help place capital into alternative real estate backed assets for investing. And so I'm kind of that face of the firm. It's a lot of relationship holding, you know, understanding what investors are looking for, really diving deep into what their goals are and trying to place the best opportunities in front of them. And we do all of our own deals, but, you know, I'm institutionally trained in economics and finance. I have a background that includes Fortune 500, you know, developing megawatts of solar throughout the Southeast, you know, consulting for, you know, multi-billion dollar companies on sales and marketing, and found myself, you know, pushed into the real estate industry after, you know, coming out of the renewable energy sector when a hurricane came through and just took a very long time to get roofs replaced with the insurance companies. And through that, I learned very, you know, two very valuable lessons. I should have raised more capital, right? And I needed to find a better industry. And I had that aha moment, bought my first house with almost six figures off the signature. And I said, all right, this is something. I just never looked away. Got very educated, finding, you know, YouTube as a great source to figure out how to demo bathrooms and put them back together down to the studs and replumbing from, you know, PEX to copper or from cast iron to PEX or whatever it called for, and just kind of figured it out along the way. And, you know, again, my skill set tends to be talking, as you can tell already, but you know, that is my goal. I want to be a master communicator, and I want to be able to pick up the phone in 10 years and have a Rolodex of investing partners that say, hey, Nick, how are you? How's the New Year's? How's the missus? How's the ski trip? And me to be able to say, great, how are the kids? Right. So that's a little bit about me.
That's amazing. I mean, hell of a story just from all the different places you've been, the things you're seeing, your transition, like you said, from like the solar specifically and then heading into the real estate world. So I know now, and you mentioned it, you're in mostly the obviously real estate world, but like the raising space and the investor relations. What drew you to that? What do you like about it? Tell me more about that journey.
Yeah. It's a funny journey. Most of us have this plan going into life saying this is kind of my skill set. And very early on, you know, I'm very analytically minded. You wouldn't be able to tell, but I'm naturally an introvert, right? This is skill sets that I've had to pick up over the years from different places. and, you know, fears I had to overcome to become the person I always wanted to be, to do the things that I never knew I could do until I became that. So, you know, part of that was, you know, going down that route of, hey, I like spreadsheets. I like economics and finance. I like day trading. You know, I worked, you know, on a farm growing up in middle school, putting a couple $1,000s away into a Roth IRA account, started day trading that after I had my first light bulb moment, not just the real estate moment, but equities was my first true love. And so started day trading in 09. You know, I do close to 20% a year. And I just was like, hey, if I can make more money sitting at a computer than working out in the field, then this is something I want to learn about. And through that, I worked for a couple of Fortune 500s, as I mentioned, did that cubicle grind. You know, I was there with the 360 ticker, getting Bloomberg certified on the terminals, you know, working for Lockheed Martin and Geico. And what I learned through that was that I didn't like cubicle life. It's cold. It's everyone is the square, right? And it's sad to say, but I just needed a little bit more interaction than that. So then that drew me to, let's go outside. How can I go outside? Solar. Started doing solar sales and, you know, eventually just ended up down that route, as I mentioned earlier.
I love that. And I don't even know if Cole knows this, but there's actually a point in time for me where I went to school for business and I was going to become a finance major.
What?
And I just comparing things. I had an internship and I had it for 3 summers. And I realized very quickly that I'm only there for 3 months, those summer months, before I go back to school. And on the third summer, I looked to my left and I looked to my right, and everybody was still sitting in the same spot. I'm like, I'm gone. I'm doing the college life. I'm having fun, but no one's moving up the corporate ladder. There's got to be something better for myself. And I realized, very similar to what you were saying, I'm way better at communicating with people. I'm not good at just sitting and staring at a screen and spreadsheet. So perhaps finance is not the major for me. So I went back. So it's just interesting to hear other perspectives on that. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. We all just kind of find our own ways in life. And one of the biggest things I saw after I graduated college was life is just like Monopoly. Everything's just a handshake away. And that's what I really liked about it. You know, you can spend 8 hours in a spreadsheet underwriting and the deal not work out. And if you do that, only your knowledge gap is compounding. But that's not the most valuable skill. The most valuable skill is the capital. So if you have, you know, 8 hours of relationship making, whether it's a no or a yes, you still made that connection. And that's just a much higher compounding ROI for me. And you'll notice I tend to work smarter, not harder, but I still work harder, if that makes sense. So I kind of get the best of both worlds.
That's so good. One of the things I want to jump back to that I love that you pointed out earlier is your early story of working on the farm and then starting to day trade. And it's cool that you realize that early on, you're like, hey, my success is irrelevant from time. I can make money faster by doing other things, irrelevant from manual labor, irrelevant from, again, time or other people, whatever it may be. And I just think it's such a valuable lesson. And that's part of the entrepreneurial thing. And it's something that's cool between anybody that's building or contributing to building a business or whatever it may be is like, you always start with something. It's like a lemonade stand. It's with you start stocks early, you buy something young, you start yard sales, something. So it's cool to hear that.
You know, I do have a really funny story because you mentioned that the first thing I ever sold was a snow cone. We had an entrepreneurship day in first grade and everybody brought brownies or, you know, homemade bracelets. Well, I said, Mom, let's go to Target. Let's get the syrup. Let's get a bag of ice. And what I noticed was I had the longest line out of any kid and I made the most amount of money and I got 2 kids in and it took 3 minutes to make a snow cone and I start running out of ice. So I start increasing my prices. And so as crazy stuff for first grade, but the noise from the snow cone machine was also a marketing factor because all the kids walking through the hallway could hear it. And so next thing you know, my line is out the door and I had to tell people I'm out of business. I ran out of supplies. That was my first entrepreneurship story. True story, swear to God. My mom is there and I'm like, you got to go back to Target. You got to go get more syrup and ice. Like we're running out. She was making trips during this day. Like I crushed it. But yeah, it's insane. My life has some really cool stories just through some of the things I've just been able to do. It's wild. So anyway, I know you have.
No. I'm glad you shared that. And congratulations on the first grade success. That was amazing.
Yeah. That was fun. $15 I made.
There it is. Big money.
Yeah, big money. For first grade.
Big money. I mean, brownies were like 5 cents. So, I mean, I grossly, dude, I was like the apple of my class. My GDP was more than most countries.
So, funny. Tell me, now that we heard a lot about, you know, some of the amazing stuff that you've got going, and of course, your first grade story, which was a huge success.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about some of the stuff that did not quite go so well. Rather be some of the live-in flips, rather it be trying to figure it out, going from farming into trying to do capital raising. I can see it in your face. You've got some horror stuff. Man, open the closet, fill us in, bring us there.
There are some horror stories. I mean, just the solar company, right? Like you have institutional quality training, you know, credits and debits, you know, P&Ls, balance sheets, none of that matters in business. It is cash flow. And going into solar right out of college was just a rude awakening of, hey, this is marketing, this is sales. These are skills you need to have very quickly to be built. I mean, there's my first capital raise, right? Getting into this space, you know, I was making off unit, you know, market deals by myself, 20, 30, 40 unit stuff, and ended up finding Chris and joining the QC Capital team to do a capital raise there. Finally got something under contract, and it was right after rates start increasing. So we get this deal, and it's hard, you know, cap rates are now 4.5, 5. We're still at a 4, but we have a HUD loan, 28 years left, 2.5% interest rate. Everyone's like, oh, okay, room to increase. Yeah, below market average. Insurance just goes $1,000 a unit higher, kills the deal. I had raised, you know, a few million at this point into this deal. I had to refund half the capital. Half the capital said I want it back. Rates are going up. I need my cash. And I was just devastated. I mean, devastated, you know, and being capital raiser, like you, very similar to door knocking, you have to be thick skinned to have a lot of no's and a lot of no shows and a lot of, oh, think about it. And you have to have the skills to get around that. And what ended up happening was through a series of events, we got out of that deal. We quickly found a new deal. It had higher returns. And I ended up raising more on that deal than I did the last deal. Wow. That we fell out of. So failures are just stepping stones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting into this space, I hired a coach. Like I did my undergrad, right? But I don't have an MBA. Like I don't have qualifications to be working at a private equity shop with no experience other than solar sales and being a CFO and permitting. Like I don't have any of that. So I bought the $5,000 course from somebody. Figure out how to underwrite this stuff, just to do it all myself, build the relationships. I can do that, right? And, you know, I talked to him after we closed that deal. And I said, hey, I just want to thank you for helping me get started in this, giving me the education I needed. I think of it as like my MBA. Like I bought a very specific class that I needed to get to fill in as a tool to be able to talk sophisticatedly with people who are investing, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars with me. And I called him, I thanked him, and he was like, oh, so, you know, how many units did you, you know, what, tell me about the deal, right? I go, it was a 257 unit class A property, you know, in Houston. And he got silent and he's like, Nick, that's not only is that more units than anyone's ever done in my class, that's more units than I've ever done. And you just did that in your first deal. And so I just, you know, again, a lot of that time, I was just kind of like in my head thinking, man, do I deserve to be here? And then to hear that, and you're just like, okay, like, I guess I do. And then you just kind of realize, like, I'm at the 1%. Like, I am the Kobe. Like, I am LeBron. Like, I am Peyton Manning. Like, you have to have that mind. Like, I am competing the top 1% when I talk to people, right? Not talking to the top 1%, but I'm competing with the top 1%. So I'm competing against the BlackRock now. Right? Like my client is his client. My client is the guy who's going to write $500,000 check, $1 million check, $200,000 check. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for the guy who wants to be educated. You know, hey, I got 50 grand. What do I do with it? It's my first time. You know, like that's, you know, most of those people think getting into it again, like I did trying to get into it, making my own deals, that you end up, it's frustrating to talk about, right? Like this is another failure, right? Not being able to do my own deals because only after do you get educated and start doing all this stuff that you really find out you don't have the net worth to do it. You don't have the experience the bank's going to lend on. And even if you could get those two things, you're going to give away most of the deal. And the seller, you have to have that credential to get the seller on the phone call with you. It's not just as easy as putting it all together. Like, they want to know you have a track record of closing. And if you don't have that, they're not even taking a seller's call with you. And now you have to still get on a phone with three or four sellers or with the buyer. You know, he's going to talk to three or four of you, right? And get a feel who's, you know, he's with the broker. The brokers, they're vetting too. And they have a sheet of information you have to fill out and go over and talk about your plan. And is that really viable? And one of the things we were able to do is say, hey, what debt are they using when they're looking to buy? Is it variable rate? Have you, you know, we were being laughed at for 6 months by brokers when our offers were the lowest in the room. And by the next 6 months after rates were going up, they're calling us back saying, guys, take the deal. And I'm like, hey, you know, it was that, but now it's 5 million less because that's where rates are going. So, you know, there's a ton I can just go on and on about, as you can tell, but.
No, it's so good. And there's so much I want to dig into there. But one of the things I want to hit first is, like, I love that you said you got out and you hired a coach. And it's something that we always talk about, whether it's at our masterminds or on this or just people we have conversations with. Like, if you want to make the move into the big leagues, you need somebody that's been there. You need the coach, whether it's just to help you or guide you or be a resource or whatever it may be. It's just essential. And we both went through the same thing, and, you know, it was critical. And it's just funny. One of the other things you were saying is just, like, getting into this, and whether it's doing your own deals or not, like, it's fucking hard. And, like, people don't know that until they do a deal. Cool. And so it makes my blood boil when people are like, oh, it must be easy just, like, syndicating or put a deal together. And it's like, you can't even comprehend how much stuff is going on. And you can't have one skill set. You can't just master sales or one piece, because if you're going to run your own deal, you got to be able to manage all of it or have a team. But then if you have a team, as you mentioned, all the equity gets diluted. And there's just so many challenges to it that – I love what you said and how you said it. It's just so good. So let me ask you this. Going from starting, let's say, from solar to you bought your first house, saw that, and now you're competing with the top 1%. What did that journey look like for, like, your evolution into that? And or what are some of the challenges and or things that you've learned, like, going from, like, a mom and pop investor to, like, a super professional, you know, client?
There's a lot to break down there. There's a lot to break down there. You know, it's been difficult for me. It really has. You know, growing up, I was always just a little bit different, you know? And even when I got to college, like, I'd tell people, like, I'm going to go buy apartment units and I'm going to raise capital. And people looked at me like I was nuts. I mean, just nuts. Tell a small-minded person your big dreams and have them look at you like you're nuts, and not find people that relate until this point in life.
Yeah.
So true. So true. And I choose my words carefully. Going on that journey, it's one of those things to where after a while, it just becomes expected that you're going to lose friends. You're going to lose touch with folks because folks cannot comprehend the goals, the mindset, and the same ambition and drive that each one of us would have, right? And so it's just one of those things to where you've kind of got to, again, choose
a word. I've heard it explained very well. And the way it was explained to me is, if your value is here and the top value they're willing to come up to is here, you now have to lose value to keep that relationship. And is that fair to you, right? And to be honest, like, we all have those relationships, right? And we've had them for a long time. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, that's fine. Like, if you want to memorize everything and do sports betting on DraftKings and, you know, go to the same bars and hang out, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't fault anybody for living that life. Like, life is hard, and it takes, again, thick skin to really get into the nitty gritty, you know, but at the same time, like, I know they're going to work 40, 50, 60 years, have 10 years left of average life expectancy. And of those 10 years, the first, when they retire, they're going to realize that the IRS is going to come in to your 401k. And if you have $15 million and everything's already paid off, they're basically going to say, you're going to take out $1+ million a year and pay tax on it and give away half of it back in taxes through a required minimum distribution. And these are the things that nobody really talks about or knows, and why so many people fall into this trap of, you know, what happens. And then even further still, like, there's a responsibility of, you know, most of the time when you, you know, leave your things behind, your money's gone within three generations, right? So how are you really setting yourself up, not only for yourself, but your family and your legacy? Because life's only getting harder. The debt's only getting higher. And if you're not in a position to afford private, you know, or, you know, the best, you're not top of the line. And that's just the brass tacks of life. And it's tough and it sucks. But, you know, at the same time, like, I'm at the 1% and I'm competing and I'm here and I've worked hard for this. And this is my time to shine. And that's how, you know, that's just where I'm at with it. You know,
I love it.
The transformation the last few years for me has really been a lot of confidence and repetition and just taking the little things of experience from everywhere I've been to say, how can I synergize all this and really become my highest and most effective self?
That's so good. And it's funny, you were talking about the generations and, you know, that goes down. And I always think I loved and I studied like the Vanderbilts. And I just think that story is so interesting. You know, the top of the top, second generation crushed it and did really well, doubled the fortune, and then just went way downhill. And it's just such an interesting case study of that kind of stuff. But anyways, I love bringing that up on the show, but also I love your analogy with, you know, different friends, different levels. That's such a good way to explain it. Dialing back in a little bit of a different direction, but
yeah,
in investments, in your stuff, whether you're raising for it, or whatever it may be, what are some of the ways that you guys manage risk and how? You know, I know a lot of it's similar to the smaller versus larger, but just for you guys, what do you experience? What do you do?
Yeah. And, you know, risk is just like business, which is just like a living organism. It lives and it breathes. It expands and it contrasts. It has personalities. It has outside influences, whether it's interest rates or quantitative easing or, you know, what war, you know, again, just insert whatever factor, just like equities markets. So, you know, again, just like equities, I, you know, when I first started out, like, I studied Benjamin Graham, who was Warren Buffett's teacher. Cause I was like, everyone's talking about Warren Buffett, but who taught him? And I found that guy, right? Cause it's never better than from the original horse's mouth, right? If you keep playing this telephone game. But Warren's very interesting and ripped to Charlie that he just recently passed. But you know, it's just fundamental investing, right? Buy things at sale. And that's why I really liked QC Capital. I'm really aligned with and synergized with them. You know, it's real estate backed. There's depreciation assets, but they're appreciating in value, right? If I did a commercial solar farm, like, those panels are only getting worse and they're not going to appreciate unless the energy rates go up, right? But we got to keep things affordable. So that's not really long-term growth-wise in a good trajectory path. But you know, it's all focused here in the Southeast. We like major markets. You know, before COVID, we were doing more, you know, B and C, which was the golden goose value add plan, right? And if you're starting off, like, you know, QC was, we did a little bit smaller deals, right? 66 units, 80 units, 100 something units, right? Mm-hmm. You start off by trying to raise capital and you put it into a 300 unit deal, right? Get that investor confidence going and then say, hey, now I'm GP on this deal and I'm raising this money. And that's basically what Chris did. And he bootstrapped everything together himself and did those deals, made those connections. You know, in terms of, you know, again, what we look at post COVID and, you know, again, what happened, everything shut down. Nobody was a necessity worker other than healthcare. And we obviously kind of saw interest rates were going to be increasing. So What happens? Layoffs, right? This is econ 101, guys. Like, if you were not in econ class, like, go take economics. Like, it's very simple to predict. Like, it's just a cycle. And so what happens if people get laid off? Who's getting laid off? It's the Amazon workers, right? Well, who were our tenants in BC class assets? It was the Amazon workers. It was the mortgage brokers, right? All these people we saw get laid off, maybe not tech workers. But, you know, again, how did we pivot? We exited at the right time. And then we went into class A, tenants with six figures or more. And we drilled down into medical areas where a lot of the tenant base were going to be nurses, doctors, you know, surgeons, anesthesiologists that wanted to come right off the campuses, right? So, you know, we bought a small, you know, 99-unit deal in San Antonio. It's ranked number 4th best place to live.
Wow.
It's right next to medical. But, you know, San Antonio in general right now, like, rents are just kind of stagnant, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in Houston, you know, we were under that HUD loan assumption deal I mentioned earlier with the 2.5% with 28 years left on the term. That was right next to the largest medical center in Texas, if not, I think, the United States, or one of the largest. It was a $1 billion campus with another $1 billion expansion and, you know, over 600,000 medical professionals and like 60,000 medical students. Like, it was literally across the street.
Wow.
It doesn't get better than that. And then it's all simple value add, right? You were able to buy it not only at a discount, right? Where there's room to increase rents, right? That deal we just bought, we turned into, right? That was about almost $300. So if I can renovate this unit and have it be market average rental rate, but it's a much higher quality unit, well, then I feel pretty confident about leasing that up. Like, it's not rocket science, right? And we're just kind of tailoring this. And I think a lot of people get too caught up in like the little numbers of it, right? Well, is it 2%? Well, it needs to be at least 4%. And, you know, at this point, you know, rates are up. Like, we're all underwriting 7% cap rates or 6.5% at this point. And, you know, most people buying are just really banking on cap rate compression. And I don't think for us as a firm, we really agreed with that, because the deals that used to have 6-8% cash flow a year are now 1-2%. And that's just too much risk to go into. And you have to really rely on affordability to come back. So even if I place your capital into a multifamily deal of that caliber, it's going to sit there for 2 or 3 years, kind of idly by. The cash flow is going to be 1-2%, which is a lot of risk to maintain during that time period. Inflation's high. So the big lump sum you're waiting for when rates come down, like, it's not worth as much. And so for us as a firm, we said, well, let's prioritize cash flow. What did they do in the 70s? Go back to economics. This isn't, you know, it's not the same song and dance, but man, does it rhyme? It's basically just a remake, right? Whether it's the Terminator or whatever movie it is, like, this is, it's the same thing. And you can just kind of stagger these events if you study the cycles, you know. And I talk, everyone asks me, like, what do you think about cryptocurrency? This is way off topic, but like, it reminds me of the dot-com bubble. We don't know which Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever it is. We don't know which one's the Amazon in the garage. And we don't know the internet as a whole, the blockchain as a whole, its entire application. Just like back in the 90s, like, we didn't know we were going to have, you know, streaming and like be able to Zoom and, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't even know what the infrastructure was going to be allowed to build. And so you might be investing in some kind of realm of it that you may not want to be in versus another point. And so for me, it's just way better of an entry point after it's already been established, right? And again, if you listen to Jamie Dimon talk about it, its primary uses are child trafficking, drugs, terrorism. Like, the use cases other than just us day trading to make money is not like legal activity. So the case for it is not really there for me. And it's not a value add on humanity's part, even though it might be a value add in some people's pockets. It's not really doing us a whole much good. But like, if you look at Singapore, they're already transacting real estate, commercial level properties, multifamily properties on the blockchain. It is much more secure. It's much more effective and efficient. But we got a long way to go. You know, who's Bezos, right? Where is he? I'll buy some chip for $10 and get 10 million little coins and put it on them. But like, it's a gamble. It's not investing. It's just a gamble. I mean, you're better off just in Forex if you're going to be trying to trade. But anyway, going back, we just mitigate risk, you know, just through common sense thinking. And it's not a matter of if things go wrong, it's a matter of when. And so you really have to say, hey, we have the confidence because we only not only have the team and the best property management's at scale and everything we can have going for us, but you know, we have this inherent confidence because of the job growth and you know, some of these other factors. And you know, that's more or less how we're mitigating the risk.
So good.
Blown away. I love it. And I mean, it just goes to show and speaks volumes towards the fact that, and I'm taking it back to a couple of things you said before,
yeah.
Finding a mentor, figuring it out, understanding and getting educated. And now you're putting that into practice, being able to identify those kind of cycles, how kind of history repeats itself, saying that without saying it. And then being able to sort of preemptively act to be proactive versus reactive when something is going to be coming.
Yeah.
Hats off to you. And I think this is a great pivotal point, and I would love to bring it into, we've kind of got a surprise for you. Didn't tell you about it.
Okay.
But we got a surprise for you.
Okay.
Cole, you want to explain it?
I'm excited. So this is our point of view. All right. So we're going to ask you a couple quick questions.
Sure.
They're broad.
Okay.
And you can ask them very quickly and succinctly, or you can elaborate, whatever
sure.
you want to do. But we're going to hit them, and we're going to go for it. So
okay.
You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
What separates a top-performing investor
from Oh, I can't hear you. The music, it's muffling you a little bit.
All right, Nate, crank it down a little bit. How's that?
Yeah, it's much better.
All right, no worries. All right, what separates a top-performing investor from the rest of the crowd?
That's a really good question. It is going to be determination and persistence. And I actually can just give you a reference here. I keep this right in front of me. This is a closing percentage, right? Based off touch points and percentage of closing. So
oh.
If you only call them once, you have a 2% chance of closing. If you call them three times, you have a 5% chance. If you call them 5 to 11 times, you have an 80% chance of closing. That is the difference right there. Most reps that make 50, 60,000 a year, they're at that 5%. They're making the three touch points and then they're done. So the difference is just, I'm gonna call you until you answer. That's it. That's the difference right there.
Couldn't have said it better.
And they know me. They go, oh, hey, Nick, how are you? We haven't talked yet, but I've left them enough voicemails. They know it's me when I call. They go, oh, hey, Nick, I meant to fill out the form. I was going to book the call on Calendly.
So good.
Oh, I love it.
All right, let's go. What's next?
What's a daily habit that's contributed to your success?
Consistently learning. Always have that drive, that hunger, that persistence to continue learning. It's only once you're out of options is when you hit that wall of I don't know what to do. But if you're always trying to educate yourself, you can never run out of options.
So good. Love it. What is a piece of advice that you would give to yourself if you were starting again?
You can do it. You can do it. I don't do yearly goals. I do like 5-year out goals. And my goal is looking at myself. You know, if you've ever heard like Matthew McConaughey, right? He's like,
yeah.
When I was an actor, like I always looked at myself in 5 years. What is he doing? What did he accomplish between now and then? And who do I need to be that person? And now that I've just, you know, again, just through my story, like I've always kind of been working to be in real estate for a very long time, understanding a lot of the benefits and knowing I kind of wanted to be here long-term, but you know, just stacking everything together and making it happen. Like you can do it. You can do it. It's just confidence.
Love it.
Love that. What's your favorite real estate and or business book?
Throwback to my first book ever. Benjamin Graham, The Little Green Book of Value Investing. It is basically, if you do not know what to do and all you know is the S&P 500, you know, that's a great place to start. It's very fundamental. It's almost like reading Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad, right? It's almost like that, but for trading stocks. Fundamental investment advice of how to pick stocks. It's very it's just look at the business. What does it actually do? Do you agree with it? Is it on sale? If you can buy it at sale and sell it at a premium, right? And it makes it super relatable, like grocery items. Like if you can get steak $1 off, why wouldn't you buy it now? And I'm like, okay, it's very simple.
Yeah. That's a first on here. I like that. It's a great recommendation. All right, last one. What is the biggest non-monetary benefit you've gotten from real estate investing or raising or whatever it may be?
Friendships, 100%. Friendships. It's the relationships, right? Like I said, like I have a Rolodex of people. You know, I have billionaires on there. I call. I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, and they'll tell me I got my mom a Bugatti for Christmas. I'm like, that's great. What color was it? You know, versus some other people, they're doing ski trips, right? And it's, again, finding the people who understand and live in this small world of like private equity and investing that I've really found people to connect with. You know, that's really been the best non-monetary value I could ask for.
Amazing answer.
Love it. Love it. Love it. We made it to the other side. How do you feel?
Whoa.
Awesome. Nick, I just want to say thank you, bottom of our hearts, for deciding to come on this show, volunteering your time, taking up your evening, coming to hang with the two of us. Means the world to us. It's been an amazing interview. Final thing that I would like to just sort of dive into is for anybody that's out there who has not yet jumped off the porch, somebody that's a little bit too scared, somebody that's a little hesitant, what would you tell them?
It's fucking hard. Fucking hard. It's not Instagram. Like, you have the HGTV goggles on, and if you're a millennial, I call it the Disney goggles, right? Where everything has a fairy tale ending, and there's this pivotal point in your story where you go, "Hey, I did." It's not. It is. It's just not. And that needs to be a reality when these gurus are trying to sell you on these courses. And again, like, I knew exactly what I was looking for when I got that guy. Like, come with specific things that you can't do yourself and come and try to get that knowledge for free at the events, or, you know, find the right people who are actually doing it, right? That have a multi-billion dollar, you know, portfolio or are doing the thing. That was the first step I took before I did anything, was find people who are doing what I want to do. And that's how I found Chris. And I talked to him a year and a half before I ever came on board with him. And the only thing I did between that initial meeting, other than asking, how are you doing this, is sending him articles about multifamily reports in Charlotte market and adding value to the relationship. That's it. Like, just plant a seed, stay top of mind, raise capital. I mean, it is very fundamentally easy to say, but I'm in the middle of a raise where I've just spent the last 6 months calling on these leads coming in. We just went under contract last week. Monday, I put out with the CEO and the underwriter a webinar, and I have been dialing 8 to 8 this entire week. And like I said, like I've had a full packed day of meetings. I have 2 notebooks here full of notes and post notes all over my office. Like, this is hard. Like, it's not easy. And it's a lot of dialing. It's a lot of doors shut in your face. It's a lot of people just never calling you back. So just know what you're getting in for. And if you're not good at these types of things, find people who are and partner with the best and build the best team you can. Because at the end of the day, you're pitching the team to the investing partner and your ability to overcome the challenges.
Nick, I mean, again, as Nate said, thank you for your time. There is so much amazing info that you gave throughout this that, like, somebody listening to this right now at the end of this needs to go back and listen to this 3 more times, because there's so much amazing stuff that you gave that just could implement immediately day one and think on and help grow. So thank you for all that different stuff and sharing your story and the challenges that you faced, all the growth. I mean, you were a young guy, and just the growth from where you started to where you are now and how much farther you still have to go is just, like, inspiring, I think, for people to see, hear, and listen to. So it's an honor to have you on. It's been super fun, and thank you again.
Yeah. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much for having me on, and looking forward to seeing you guys in the next episode.
Hell yeah. Oh,
you know it. You know it. For everybody out there, if you're on the YouTube, great to see you on the podcast. Get home safe. Thank you all so much for tuning into another episode. We'll catch you guys next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Views. If you enjoyed today's show, take a second to hit the like button. And if you haven't already, subscribe to our channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time, peace and love.